This is Dr. Rebecca Daniel-Burke, your host for the American Counseling Association's 2015 podcast series. Today we are speaking with Dr. Susan Hammonds-White about Imago Relationship Therapy. Dr. Hammonds-White received her doctorate from Vanderbilt University's Human Development Counseling Program. She has been in private practice in Nashville since 1989. She is a certified Imago Relationship Therapist focusing on helping couples rediscover the joy of their relationship, and she is a level to certified EMDR therapist with focus on childhood trauma. She also works with issues of disordered eating with focus on body acceptance and intuitive eating. She is the current president of the American Association of State Counseling Boards and is the president of the Tennessee Health-Related Board for Professional Counselors. Welcome, Dr. Hammonds-White.
Thank you for having me, Rebecca.
Great. Well, let's dive into the questions. My first question is, what is Imago Relationship Therapy? Who started it and when was it started?
Imago Relationship Therapy is a dialogical process that helps couples rediscover the connection that they have often lost in their ongoing relationships. It was started by Harville Hendricks and his wife, Helen LaKelly Hunt, and it was started about 30 years ago and has been being developed through all that time.
30 years ago. So it started with Harville Hendricks, who had a couple of books that were very popular. What's the title of one of his books?
Getting the Love You Want.
Yes.
Is the major one. Harville appeared on Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in his development of Imago, and I think Oprah chose him as one of the 25 best interviews or spots that she has done over all
mm-hmm.
the years of her talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's amazing. What if somebody comes into you and it's a client, and the client says, you know, tell me a little bit about what this therapy is about, and tell me about how long it'll take. Do I need to be in a couple all of this time? What kind of questions would you answer?
As an individual, if an individual came in?
Yes.
If an individual came in and they were in a coupleship, I would say
mm-hmm.
to them, this process really is focused on couples. And it would be very helpful for your partner, your spouse, or whoever you're with to come with you. There is a way of working with Imago that it's possible to work with an individual, and that's the second book that he wrote, which is Keeping the Love You Find, and that's focused on working with individuals. But it really, in my opinion, it works best when you are working together with a relational experience.
Yeah. So it's possible to work with, let's say somebody is in a couple and one person in the couple does not want to come in. One person could come in and work on the relationship, although I'm sure it's better for couples. Is that correct?
They could. I think that's really a challenge.
Yeah. What's the developmental journey that all relationships take, and what can couples do when relationships hit the wall of a power struggle?
Well, the developmental journey is one that we've understood as partly conscious and partly mm-hmm. unconscious. When we first get together, we are drawn by all of the wonderful qualities that we see in the other person. We are madly in love, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's romantic love, and romantic love is a thing that happens when we found kind of the click,
mm-hmm.
and that person is the perfect imago match for
mm-hmm.
us. And we don't know what an imago match is, but we know that when we're with them, the birds sing and the clouds
mm-hmm.
are not in the sky and everything is beautiful, and all we want to do is to, we can't wait until we're with that person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an indescribably delicious period of time in a couple's life. And
mm-hmm.
it's really a time of what we would call merger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you like that kind of music? I can't believe you like that music. That's my favorite song too. It's so we're looking at all of these ways that we meet.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on at that time, Rebecca, is that we are under the influence of drugs.
Uh-huh.
Because there are drugs that are pouring into our bodies that are activated by the presence of this beloved person.
Mm-hmm.
They are pheromones and peptides, and the real struggle with them is that the more we're with that person, the sooner they get used up. And when they get used up, all of that wonderful energy of merger begins to shift into, well, you're not quite what I expected. You mean you see it that way?
Yeah.
It's really interesting to see it happen, and really it's a developmental process, because what's happening is that the individuality of each person is reasserting itself. We've been so focused on the merger, and now we're going but I'm still my own person. And what we unconsciously want is for the other person to come over into our world and do it the way we do it. And, of course, at the same time, our partner is saying, no, you need to come into my world and do it the way I do it, which is why we talk about the power struggle.
Yes.
Because the second stage of relationship is always the power struggle. We see this in groups. We see this with couples. We see it in families.
Yes.
It just happens. We hit that wall. And all of this so far that I'm describing is unconscious. We don't know that this is happening. All we know is all of a sudden it doesn't feel so good anymore.
I mean, what we know is maybe that we were in the pink cloud stage and everything was beautiful. And suddenly, I can't believe he said this to me. I can't, you know, that kind of thing starts happening. It's interesting.
And we get to the point, this is really where couples end up saying, well, I married the wrong person. Or I'm just not, you're just not right for me. And so you break up and look for someone else, and then you go through the same cycle. Because everybody's going to go through the falling in love and the power struggle. We see people, I always think of people who have done kind of serial monogamy. Think about Elizabeth Taylor, for example. I think she married 7 times. And I believe that every one of those times she was looking for the pink cloud once again. And then couldn't find it, so decided this isn't the right one. And what we now know is that in order to get through to the conscious relationship, we have to first of all learn what these stages are. And then when we go beyond into consciousness, what we're doing is really recognizing that we're two separate people. We do have similarities and differences, but you're never going to be totally, unconditionally present in everything for me, just as I'm not going to be able to do that for you. So we move into the stage of awareness and consciousness. And then that's where the imago relationship work picks up, because that's where we start learning the skills of relationship.
Yeah, you meet these people who've, you know, one of somebody I know has been married 4 times, and I think she's like 39, and you know, I always, you know, wonder what is that about. This sounds like it. This is what it's about. Yeah, the pink cloud. And so for example, myself, I've been married 34 years. I've only been married once. Does that mean we went through those stages, that those stages probably happened even without us knowing it?
Very likely. And, and what this is what tends to happen with there are kind of 3 options when you hit the power struggle. One of them is you break up. Mm-hmm. Another one is that you sort of settle. You sort of say mm-hmm. to yourselves, well, okay, this is okay. And you start living parallel lives where you're, mm-hmm. you get along, you're okay, you don't necessarily fight with each other, but mm-hmm. you may have given up on what you really longed for,
yeah,
which is kind of that deep connection and deep mm-hmm. understanding and passion that comes from a mature relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So there's breakup, there's parallel lives, or the third option is become conscious and move into consciousness. And consciousness means you recognize that relationship is work,
mm-hmm.
that when you have conflict, you're in a place of growth trying to happen in the relationship. And you learn the skills of conflict resolution and of how to keep your marriage or your partnership really alive and joyful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the work that I do comes in.
Particularly the joyful part. A lot of, you know, it's rare that you hear people talking about the joy of
right.
a relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Describe the concept of an imago.
So this to me is one of the ways in which Harville Hendrick's work really differs from the way a lot of other marital therapies have mm-hmm. been developed. Imago is a Latin word that means image. And mm-hmm. what Harville really came to understand and has been able to teach is that all of us have an unconscious template mm-hmm. on the inside that is created by the positive and the negative experiences that we had with the people we grew up with our primary mm-hmm. caregivers. That can include mom, dad, grandparents, a significant helper in the family. There are a lot of people that contribute to the creation of an imago. But what we have with an imago is I'm going to be attracted to these positive characteristics that I experience in you. And I'm also going to be attracted unconsciously to some things that may be not so positive, but that I don't really know about mm-hmm. until we've really gotten into the relationship. Because what will happen is in the power struggle, I'm going to provoke you, or I'm going to project onto you, or I'm actually going to have picked someone who has this combination
mm-hmm.
of negative and positive experiences, and then I'm going to be frustrated, and I'm going to struggle with them. And my partner is doing the exact same thing, only from the other direction. So we have this place on the inside of us that chooses a person who, let me give you an example from my own life.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is an absolutely wonderful guy that when I first was involved with him, one of the things I just loved about him was how careful he was and how protective he was. And mm-hmm. he just was always making sure that things were safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then as time went on into our relationship, all of a sudden that characteristic that I had loved in him, it turned on me, and it started feeling to me like I was being held back. And
mm-hmm.
what do you mean? I'm a grown-up. Of course I'm going to put my seatbelt on, rather mm-hmm. than having him have to sit in the driveway and wait until the seatbelt was put on, because that was what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that come from in me? I was really attracted to someone who was really there, who was really present.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I was also angry at someone who thought that I couldn't do it myself and couldn't
mm-hmm.
be a grown-up. This came directly from my father.
So you had some unfinished business that you
Precisely.
Were working on in this relationship.
Precisely. And that's what we believe in imago is that the main job of our relationship is to help us finish our childhood business.
Mm-hmm.
And help us
yeah.
become the full and complete human beings that we are meant to be, and our partner holds the key to doing that.
And that may be why you have, you know, working with an individual is really hard to do.
It's very difficult. It really is.
Yeah. What makes imago relationship therapy different from other kinds of couples therapy?
Well, I think it's very specifically two things. One is the concept of the imago. Imago relationship therapy puts together a number of different strands of psychotherapy, I think. There's a behavioral component. There's a cognitive component. There's a psychodynamic component. And they are all important in the way that we think about relationships. The other thing that I think is really central to the imago process is what the central tool, which is the couple's dialogue. And the dialogue that we teach couples to use is both in, there's a way in which it is a dialogue between the two people in the relationship, and it's also possible to be dialogical with yourself, to have an intra-dialogical experience as well as an inter-dialogical experience. So one of the main differences between John Gottman's work or Susan Johnson's emotional focus therapy, it's the use of the dialogue and it's the centrality of the couple. You know, we as imago therapists try to stay out of the couple's way. We teach them the process and then help them stay in the boat of the dialogue rather than so much having the flow of the therapy session go from client to me or client to me as therapist. It's more partner to partner, and I will help you, I will coach. You might want to try saying this, or here's a possibility, but it's very much staying in the boat of the relationship.
Can you give an example of the
intra-dialogical?
Yes.
One of the ways to think about that is that we all have different parts of self, and I might be able to have a dialogical discussion with a part of me, maybe a part of me that's anxious. Most of us have anxious parts.
That's right.
You know, and so I might actually sit down and say, okay, anxious part, I'd like to hear from you. What would you like to tell me? And maybe that part will say, well, I'm only anxious because I'm trying to help you, because I don't want you to get hurt.
Yeah.
And so I might then repeat and say, okay, so what I hear you saying is that what you're about is trying to help me. Is there more? And I would wait and say, and the other part might say, yeah, there's more because you remember what it was like when we were little and, you know, it wasn't really safe for you to go into new places.
Yeah.
Because you got so scared. And so I'm just really trying to make it better. So then I would repeat that back. The main purpose of the intra-dialogical would be to get clearer information about different parts that normally are thinking that they're being very helpful, but maybe at this point, at this time in your life, maybe you don't need that help as much. Maybe you need something else, but they don't know that.
It's kind of reminding me a little bit of ego state therapy and Gestalt.
And IFS, internal family systems.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting how he's joined these various...
This is what I would call Imago 2.0. This is kind of a really lovely extra development that's happened, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years that is really exciting to many of us who do this work.
I think many of us who are counselors for many years, like you and I are, we've heard about Imago in the last 10 years or so. But many people, I wonder what that is. And then you go to the next page of the conference brochure. You know,
So
I think you're going to be teaching a lot of people what Imago is about through this podcast.
Great.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Absolutely. What is the goal of Imago relationship therapy?
I heard a wonderful member of the Imago faculty named Nedra Fetterman just recently. She came and did a wonderful workshop for us here in Nashville and also taught in Boca Raton, Florida recently. And I believe that her statement is the most succinct and the most the right word. It has the most clarity.
Okay.
Imago's goal is consciousness. It's consciousness on the part of both people in the couple.
Ah, okay.
Consciousness of what's going on, what you're doing, what's going on in the inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually to save a marriage, because some marriages are not going to end up being saved.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just part of the reality. But if two people can leave a relationship with a higher degree of consciousness about what brought them there, what were the things that stood in their way, what were the barriers, what were the good things,
Yes.
They stand a better chance of finding what they want in future.
Yes. the next question is a big one, so take your time answering. But describe some of the important concepts used in Imago relationship therapy. For example, such things as caring behaviors, appreciations, re-romancing, relationship vision, and couples dialogue.
Okay, great.
Okay.
I'm going to take those and put the first four in one category and the dialogue in its own category. The first four, caring behaviors, appreciations, re-romancing, and relationship vision, those are what I would put in the category of putting positives into the emotional bank account of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, John Gottman gave us this wonderful picture of a relationship having an emotional bank account. And I think that that's a real contribution that he has given to this work. You know, what we've learned from his research is that it takes five positives to outweigh one negative.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a blow up, if you have a struggle, if you have a difficult time, you got to have five positive experiences to kind of outweigh that negative and get yourself back on an even keel. So one of the some of the things that we use are things like, for example, caring behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
The recommendation of an Imago therapist is that each partner make a practice every day of doing a caring behavior.
What's an example of a caring behavior?
Well, a caring behavior might come from a list that you have had each couple develop. And the list would be, this is something that if you did this, it would be a surefire winner. Because I would feel loved and cared for if you did this for me. And it could be... And these are not like tickets to Rome. We're not talking about, you know, the giant things. These are...
Right. We're talking about cooking dinner, maybe, right?
Yeah, the little daily things. It's like a caring behavior for me is if my husband brings me the perfect cup of coffee, you know, that has the right amount of cream and is in the cup that I love, you know, what it says is you thought about me. You know me. You've thought about something that you know is special to me. That would be an example. It might be a caring behavior might be you gave me an unexpected kiss, just out of the blue, a real kiss, not a peck. You know. So they come from each person's experience. And you know, it is so interesting, Rebecca. One of the things that happens sometimes is that I will ask couples to make this list, and some of them will say, "I don't know. I don't have any idea what would make me feel good or loved."
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
kind of a signal that says, well, we need to spend a little time with being curious about that. I wonder I wonder what that's about, that that that's something that you don't know about yourself, or that maybe you're so unable to know because you're afraid to ask.
It's kind of sad, but at the same time, you don't know what you don't know.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So caring behaviors, and to do a caring behavior, because one of the things that that does is change your brain. And we're going to talk about the brain, I hope, a little bit later. But
good.
We are so good as human beings at focusing on the negative. And there are really good reasons for that, because when the saber-toothed tigers were after us, you know, we had to be aware of all the danger possibilities.
Yeah.
But we're not so good at focusing on the positive. So doing things like caring behaviors reroutes the brain and gives us a more of a pathway, a positive pathway, that we can then develop. It's like exercising a muscle. If we keep doing that, we're holding our partner in a positive light. It's hard to focus on all those criticisms when what we're really focusing on is I want to give her a gift. Or I want to give him a gift that would be just right. I want to really search out and figure what that is.
And it's interesting that you brought up the saber-toothed tiger so that we could see just how ancient some of these feelings might be.
Oh, it's so deep. It's so deep. Yes, it is. So moving on to appreciations, that's another suggestion that we make, that people say to each other every day, that they take time apart every day and say, "I want to give you an appreciation. Are you available?" Number one, you ask.
Right.
Ask for a time. Because, you know, if it's in the middle of the soccer game or whatever, you're probably not really available to hear. So, "I want to give you an appreciation. Are you available?" "Yes, I'm available." "I really felt loved when you," or "I was so appreciative when you," and whatever that is. And then we teach the other person to say it back. "So you really felt loved when I," and you say whatever it was. And then that person says, "You're welcome."
Because
it was a lovely gift. It was a special thing that they're being appreciated for. And once again, that's about the neural pathways in the brain.
Sure.
We do that on a daily basis. We're exercising that muscle, creating those neural pathways.
Reprogramming.
And that takes us to re-romancing.
I like the sound of that, re-romancing. So what is that?
That's really neat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Most of the time in coupleships, in the early days, it's so easy to be playful and to laugh and to be sexual and to, because those love drugs are just pouring through your system, and it's just easy. It's spontaneous. And what we learn is that when those early days are over, it's not so spontaneous anymore.
Yeah.
So rather than saying, "Oh, it should be spontaneous, and if it's not, something's wrong," what we instead say is we have to be intentional about romancing. We have to find the things, look for the things that help our partner to feel sexy or feel mm-hmm. attractive mm-hmm. And do those things. And one of the things that we sometimes kind of laugh about is that our guys sometimes really have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
Because they don't get good training in how mm-hmm. to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there are actually books that are helpful that we tell people about. 101 mm-hmm. Ways to Be Romantic is one of them that I think is, mm-hmm. It's 1001 Ways to Be Romantic. There are several. I'm not saying that that's necessarily the best
right.
one. But
right.
there are guides that can help.
Okay. Yeah.
With that, it's not only the only thing is not flowers. There are
right. flowers is not the only thing, but flowers are pretty darn nice.
Flowers are lovely. Not to say that they're not lovely. They're
yeah.
Just, yeah, they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another thing that we really do say is that couples need to set aside time for romance.
Yes.
You know, you can't depend on I'm in the mood.
Uh-huh.
You have to say.
Because the other person might not be.
Right. And you just have to say, you make an agreement, we're going to be romantic together.
Uh-huh.
Whatever form that takes. It could be massage or whatever, mm-hmm. but it's a sacred time.
Mm-hmm. Do some couples talk about re-romancing in terms of their sexual life or sexual behaviors?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because when people get really busy and really far apart from each other and are leading those either in the midst of the power struggle or in the parallel lives, the focus on being sexual together can really diminish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it is...
Yeah,
it is important to really, you know, I heard someone say one time that sex is only 5% of a relationship, but it's an important 5%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's bonding.
Absolutely. What about relationship vision?
The relationship vision is an exercise that we ask couples to undertake, mm-hmm. and it really involves each person making a list of about 20 things that they believe are crucial for their relationship, and we ask them to write it in the present tense and as we.
Okay.
You know, for example, we have a regular and enjoyable sex life.
Uh-huh.
We make decisions jointly. We are in agreement that we want to build a house on the lake,
mm-hmm.
or something like mm-hmm. that. So we ask them to do that separately, and then to prioritize what they think are the most important, and mm-hmm. then they get together with their partner, and in using the dialogue process, which I'm going to talk about, they kind of hash out, what is our vision?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we see these things?
Yeah.
It's kind of like a mission statement for a relationship.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of one?
Well, I gave you some of the, usually they come out with like 5 or 10 things.
Okay.
That they uh-huh. then put, they might write it out as our mission statement and put it on the refrigerator, or
I see.
Check back every, some people use that as a New Year's check-in. How are we doing
uh-huh.
with our
uh-huh.
vision?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Now to couples dialogue.
Okay, so the dialogue is, it's the wonderful process that is kind of the central experience of this kind of couples work.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach it, and when we teach it, the first thing we say is, this is a really different way of doing things,
mm-hmm.
because we're not used to listening to each other this way. Usually when you're talking about something that's of importance to you and that maybe is a little controversial, more than likely what your partner is doing is over there thinking, how can I tell you you're wrong? That's not right. That's not the way it is. It's really this way.
Right.
So one of the first things that we do with the couple's dialogue is we take that out of it so that only one person is talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person is a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
All they do is mirror.
Yeah.
So the first step is asking for time. I'd like to talk about X. When are you available?
Mm-hmm.
And so you make an agreement about a good time. Can't be in the middle of the soccer game or, you know, in the
right.
middle of whatever's going on with the kids or whatever. So mm-hmm. you make an agreement. We also recommend that if it's a topic that has some controversy or some disagreement, some conflict,
mm-hmm.
that you make an agreement that you talk about it within 24 hours.
Okay.
Because that, otherwise, if you keep putting it off, it's not going to get done.
Yeah, and it's going to get stronger.
And it'll get worse, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We use the mm-hmm. metaphor of the rug, you know, putting it under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, your rug is going to have a lot of lumps.
Right. You want people to walk on it.
Right. So the first step would be, I'd like to have a dialogue about X. When are you available? Well, I happen to be available now. So the sender is the person who is going to talk about the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And the receiver is the person who's going to mirror.
Okay.
And really all they do, Rebecca, is just say, so what I hear you saying is.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. and then they say, did I get that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they say, is there more?
Yeah.
And you keep saying, is there more, until the other person has said what needs to be said about
okay.
whatever it is. And then mm-hmm. the receiver would say, so basically what I've heard you say is, and kind of summarize it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it makes sense to me that this is your experience, because I do interrupt you sometimes. Maybe they're talking
mm-hmm.
about how I feel when I get interrupted. And I imagine that you feel about that pretty frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
And then you would switch. And then the other person would have the opportunity to talk about their experience of whatever
mm-hmm.
this issue is
mm-hmm.
and go through those same steps. This is not a way to solve a problem. This is a way to go deeper into an understanding
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
what each person's experience is. And often when I'm teaching this, Rebecca, what I will do is I have some models of the brain in my
mm-hmm.
office, and one of them has lots of colors and the other one doesn't, so they're different
mm-hmm.
brains. So I will give each person a brain to hold. And
mm-hmm.
I will say, okay, your brain is different from his brain.
Yeah.
And
well, I like the idea of holding the brain, yeah.
Yeah. Because we forget, you know, and
mm-hmm.
what we tend to think is that people see the world the way we see it. And
mm-hmm.
we don't. We see it very differently.
Yeah, one of the things with couples dialogue that I think is very difficult is when one person is trying to explain, you know, how they're feeling, and the other person really can't listen. And the reason they can't listen is because they're thinking about how they're going to respond.
Precisely.
And yes, and how
yeah.
how it's, you know, what the person is saying is incorrect,
right.
and wanting to correct them,
right.
and
right.
unable to listen. Therefore,
right. And one
yeah.
of the things that we do teach is how important it is to breathe. In the beginning,
mm-hmm.
to center
mm-hmm.
yourself with breath. Three
yeah.
good centering breaths right to begin with
mm-hmm.
Will help you stay out of that defensive place.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea. So being mindful and
mm-hmm.
having some breathing. Yeah.
But it's a process. And people tell me in the beginning, this is so long and it's awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, but... If they stick with it and really, really take it in and start practicing it, it makes such a difference. It's a wonderful process. And people use it to deal with conflict. You know, but so don't use it when you're in the middle of a conflict. When you're elevated and angry and in the grip of reactivity.
Talk about the brain and imago relationship therapy. You've mentioned it before, but what does it mean to have a flipped lid, for example?
So if you can imagine, hold up your hand and make a fist.
Okay.
The bottom part where your wrist is, that's called a reptilian brain. It's the brainstem. And the only thing that a reptilian brain knows about is danger. You know, and if I am in my reptilian brain, all I can think about is something's really wrong.
Yeah.
If you go on up and look at your thumb that's kind of covered over by your fingers. And the mid part that's covered over, that's the mammalian brain, the brain of feelings that all mammals share. And that brain is the brain that knows about fight or flight. I will fight, I will fly away, I will submit, I will change colors in order to be safe. It's all about safety.
Yeah.
So if I'm in a place of being, I'm angry or I'm scared or I'm hurt, if you take your fingers and put them straight up, your lid is flipped. Because those fingers are your prefrontal cortex. And, of course, your prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that evolved later in the evolutionary process, is the part that can think, that has judgment, that has ideas of the future and the past. And when your lid is flipped, your fingers are up, all you are is dealing with your mammalian and your reptilian brains. And you can't hear another person's understanding of things. The mammalian brain, the reptilian brain, only has the present. It doesn't have the future or the past. All it knows is, I'm not safe. And something's really wrong. So in order to be able to have a dialogue, for example, you have to wait until the lid is on.
Which is
why
makes a lot
of
sense.
When are you available? Make an appointment.
That makes a lot of sense. Talk about the importance of intentionality in imago relationship therapy.
Intention is a big word in imago because remember we talked about the two unconscious stages of the developmental process?
Yes.
The romantic and the power struggle. Once you move into awareness, what you're doing is doing things with intention, and you're doing things consciously. So I am going to intentionally choose to do appreciations. I'm going to intentionally choose to do caring behaviors. I'm going to intentionally choose to work on my relationship. I'm doing this with consciousness. I'm not depending on how I feel. It's we say that word a lot.
Intentionality.
Right.
And what are some, give me an example of somebody who has a problem with intentionality when you're working with them in imago.
The people that I see that have trouble with that are often the ones who kind of just haven't gotten that. They still believe in the romantic ideal. It should be so easy, and if it's not easy, then I've just chosen the wrong person.
Then maybe we should just move on to someone else.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they don't want to see, or they are not able to see, that a relationship is always going to be an ongoing and evolving thing that you need to work on.
Mm-hmm. What about sex?
Well, we talked a little bit about sex before. Sex mm-hmm. is a really important part of a relationship. However, it's not the totality of it. Mm-hmm. We do recommend, as one of the three things that couples do, is that couples need to set aside a weekly time that they both agreed on in which they agree that they are going to be physical in some way.
Mm.
It doesn't necessarily have to be intercourse, but it does need to be an agreement that they both keep. So the idea of, not tonight, dear, I have a headache.
Yeah,
Even if you have a headache, even if you're not inclined, you go ahead. Because mm-hmm. it's often the case that if you do go ahead, you're going to find yourself feeling a lot of pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like the Adlerian concept of act as if.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So act as if you're enjoying it, and you actually probably will enjoy it.
Right, because bodies like to experience sexual experience.
Right. Like to be touched.
Mm-hmm.
All of that's important. What if you're working with a couple and they have very different ideas of, you know, so let's just give an example of, so let's say that it's a heterosexual couple
mm-hmm.
and the man wants to have sex once a week and the woman wants to have sex twice a week. How do you work with that?
Well, I would say the once a week is the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, they really have to negotiate it. I mean, it could be they have sex twice a week one week and once a week the next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, or one or the other of them, if they are, depends on what they really want, Rebecca. I mean, if mm-hmm. one of them really wants intercourse every single time, or if there's a way that there could be a mutual agreement for a different kind of stimulation,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know what that would be. Some of it depends on what the partner is wanting from that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I want to be sexual twice a week because when I'm sexual is the only way that I really feel close to you? Or
right.
Is it that
a release of tension sometimes?
Tension at times, or it
mm-hmm.
depends on what they want from each other. Now, there is mm-hmm. a wonderful woman, an Imago relationship therapist, who has written extensively about this,
mm-hmm.
Tammy Nelson. She has
okay.
a book called Getting the Sex You Want.
And we will put those references to the few books you've mentioned
uh-huh.
on the podcast page.
Okay.
So she's written Getting the Sex You Want, mm-hmm. and she is an Imago therapist,
she
I'm
is.
Assuming.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell me a little about that book.
Well, it just kind of goes through a lot of the things that we need to really be talking to each other about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the most amazing things about sex and relationships is that people don't talk.
Yes, that's right.
We sort of all the things that people, couples often have a belief that their partner ought to know.
Yes.
You know, X, Y, or Z, whatever that might be, and that if I have
right.
to tell them, it doesn't count.
Yes. Or some kind of magical thinking like, we had sex every day when we met. What happened?
Right.
You know, something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Mm-hmm.
She really encourages, and she has wonderful dialogue examples to help people really move
mm-hmm.
into talking about what they really want in
yeah.
sex. And she also has a couple of chapters at the end of the book about that's really good information about male sexuality and female sexuality. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's a really good reference.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. What are three things that couples can do to keep their relationship strong?
These are the three things that we recommend. One is
okay.
have a date night.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, once a week. Be sure
yeah.
that you do something as a couple. Not
mm-hmm.
with your family, not with other couples, something for the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
Just the two of you. It doesn't have to be fancy. It could be, you know, going to the neighborhood park and taking a walk, or
right. It doesn't have to cost a lot.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. a regular protected time for your coupleship.
Yes.
That the message is my coupleship matters.
And uh-huh.
We want to put this ahead of other things. So that's one.
Okay.
The second one is we've already talked about making sure that you have a protected time for physical connection.
Okay.
And the third one is make sure that you have protected time for a regular weekly dialogue.
Mm-hmm. And could it just be a check-in? I mean,
as
does
far
it need
as the dialogue be? Goes?
Yes.
It could be. It could okay. be, I mean, the topic could be, I want to talk to you about all the things that happened at work this week that were mm-hmm. hard for me, or that I, mm-hmm. Or the triumphs that I had, or whatever it might be.
Right.
But
yeah,
those, if you, if, and all what those have in common, Rebecca, is they're all protected time for the coupleship.
I like the term protected time. That's an imago term that I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, this is our last question, and this has been so interesting.
Oh,
I really
cool.
appreciate you talking with us today, and you will reach lots of people. Here's the last question. ACA now has over 55,000 members, most of whom are clinicians. Is there anything I have not asked you that you want our members to know?
Well, I would love for them to know that Imago is a really wonderful process, that there are great
mm-hmm.
teachers out there
yeah.
that can help them learn the process, and particularly for our younger clinicians who are coming along,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
this is a wonderful way of working with couples
mm-hmm.
that helps them grow and change and get stronger. So
it's hopeful, isn't it?
It's
hopeful.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful process. It's certainly changed my relationship.
Yeah.
Over the
uh-huh.
years, and if
yeah.
it did nothing else, it would be worth it for that. But it's also, what I get out of this, Rebecca, is that I get to see couples grow and change and get stronger
great.
And happier. And
that's fantastic.
That's a wonderful thing.
And I like how positive it is. You know, I know this has happened to you because it's happened to me as a therapist. People have come in and said, I think we're getting divorced.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of our last-ditch effort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We want to say that we've been to couples counseling, so
mm-hmm.
we're doing this, but we're pretty much going to get divorced. You
right.
know,
right.
How do you work with Imago with a couple like that?
Well, you know, we say, you know, that's your choice, and you may do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some things that you could do before you go there
mm-hmm.
that might make a difference. And you have to decide whether you're willing to put your decision off for 6 months and
mm-hmm.
do this work for a while and see what happens.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, because it sounds very non-judgmental and engaging
mm-hmm.
and hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when there are children, I really always emphasize to couples,
mm-hmm.
if you possibly can, give this a chance, because your children will thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, when I was a very young counselor, I was working in a college counseling center on a campus, and an intake form that was specific to that college counseling center,
mm-hmm.
and we asked some questions. And one of the questions was, "What is the most difficult thing that's happened to you in your life?"
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot tell you how many college-age students. Now we're talking about high-functioning people because they're in college.
Mm-hmm.
Said, "When my parents got divorced,"
yeah.
and it didn't matter when it was. It didn't matter if they were 3 or they were 21.
Yeah.
It was, you know, the trauma
yeah.
of their life.
Yeah. And the sad thing about that, you know, is that 50% of first marriages still end in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
63%, mm-hmm. I believe, is second, 78% of third.
Wow.
So people don't get better unless they get help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And is there a site somewhere that tells us who is an Imago-trained therapist in our area?
Yes.
Okay, we'll put that on the podcast page as well.
Great.
So our listeners can see it there. Anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Susan Hammonds-White, for joining us today to discuss Imago relationship therapy.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rebecca.
Okay. To view links to this program or to write to the presenter or the host, please go to www.counseling.org and click on the podcast page. This is Dr. Rebecca Daniel Burke, your host for the ACA 2015 podcast series, signing off.